Welcome to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program. I'm Sally Mock, and I'm joined by former Capital newspaper reporter Chuck Johnson and University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldin. And Rob, the U.S. Supreme Court now has a 4-4 ideological split with the death this week of Antonin Scalia. And that means President Obama's Clean Power Plan could potentially be in the news a lot over the next few months. And that has implications for Montana's gubernatorial race between Governor Steve Bullock and businessman Greg Gianforte.
Right. Yeah. Things can change quickly. Last week, we were talking about how the Clean Power Plan had been largely removed as a campaign issue because of that Supreme Court stay. In setting up that stay, many court watchers thought that the Supremes tipped their hand, that these new EPA rules would eventually be struck down. But that stay, as you noted, was issued on a 5-4 basis, Scalia in the majority. With his death, it's now 4-4. And in the case of a tie, it's the lower court's ruling that holds. And in this case, that means the D.C. Circuit Court, which is scheduled to hear oral arguments in this case in June and is widely expected to back up the administration's position. Given that expectation and that the D.C. Circuit is going to issue this ruling prior to the election, the Clean Power Plan will be back in the spotlight for the governor's race. And as a practical matter, as just a purely political matter, even though this is a blow to Republican efforts on policy grounds, it actually, I think, probably helps Gianforte. It means that he can, again, point to the Clean Power Plan as a powerful example of how regulations are holding back the Montana economy and killing Montana jobs.
And as we've said before, this is a tricky issue for Governor Bullock because his constituency is split on the issue of the Clean Power Plan between labor and environmentalists. And he has, meanwhile, put on hold his advisory council that was put together to come up with what would be Montana's plan to reduce its carbon emissions by a hefty 47%. It's hard to know what that council is going to do now. Probably still be on hold. What's your guess?
I think so. Bullock, I suspect, is in no hurry to bring any more attention to this issue or to reconvene the council for the exact reason you mentioned. It is a tough issue for him. It splits his base to key wings of the Democratic Party, labor and environment. They're totally split on this, and he risks making one side angry no matter what he does.
Meanwhile, the Washington State Senate has passed a bill that helps a Washington-based utility plan for shutting down Colstrip Plants 1 and 2, which would have a big economic impact, especially in eastern Montana, and that could also be an issue in the governor's race.
Right, for sure. And I think if you're Colstrip or part of the coal industry, there's real reason to be concerned here. Hundreds of relatively good-paying jobs are at stake. And you have not only what's going on in Washington State, where the Senate voted this week overwhelmingly, 42-7, bipartisan vote to set up a fund to help pay for shutting down two of the four power plants at Colstrip in the event that becomes necessary or preferable. And of course, this is going on in a larger context. The Oregon legislature is looking at the same thing. And as we've discussed, you've got the federal Clean Power Plan out there. So all of this is kind of coming down at the same time. Clearly, momentum is working against Colstrip for the reasons we've discussed. This is an issue that fits right into the Gianforte playbook and creates some real headaches for the Bullock campaign.
So many of these energy issues are out of Montana's control, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an issue in the gubernatorial race, but neither candidate really can control what a Washington utility or a D.C. Circuit Court is going to do.
Right. Yeah. You know, the owners of the Colstrip plants, none of them are here in Montana. So what we've seen is that Republicans have to go over and try to convince lawmakers in Washington to not do what they seem to be in the process of doing. Senate's already done it. House seems likely to follow suit. And same with Oregon. And I think this is one of the points that's driving the frustration of people who are worried about Colstrip, is that it seems like the die has been cast. This is out of their hands and the writing's on the wall, and there's not much that they can do about it.
You know, it's sort of like Montana's economy has always been. We're dependent on factors really that we have no control over. The price of copper, the price of wheat, the price of cattle, all of which are determined by national and international forces. But Montana either benefits or suffers from, you know, what these prices turn out to be without really having much, if any, control over them.
Mm-hmm. And what becomes state and local issues are how the state leaders respond to those actions,
yes.
Right? Yeah. One quick note, Rob, about the effort to appoint a successor to Justice Scalia. And as expected, Montana's two senators come down differently on whether the president should go ahead and nominate someone and the Senate should vote on that.
Yeah, this is one of those issues where everyone on the two partisan sides lines up in very predictable ways. Tester said it would be almost criminal if the president didn't put someone up and the Senate failed to consider that person. Daines said the best way to ensure this process, this is his quote, the best way to ensure this process remains nonpartisan would be waiting until after the election. You know, this is one of those things kind of like the Senate filibuster. It depends whether you're in the majority or the minority, whether you like the Senate filibuster. Well, here we have that same kind of thing playing out. And the difficulty is that the Constitution is silent as to how long a seat can remain open. There aren't any rules that say explicitly anything about the timing of filling a vacancy. And so it becomes a political question. And that's the thing we're seeing here. And one of the ways you can tell that this is just a purely partisan issue with very little principle behind it is to imagine at this point in the George W. Bush presidency, we would see Republicans making the arguments that Democrats are right now, and Democrats making the arguments that Republicans would have been back then.
And none of us are fooled.
Well, I hope not. Yeah, we certainly shouldn't be fooled. This is a partisan and political issue. And despite a lot of the people back in Washington trying to make the argument that there's some principle here, this is just hard-knuckle politics.
There you go. Well, Chuck, some documents were released recently to the Associated Press that show the extent to which a dark money group called the National Right to Work Committee tried to influence several Montana legislative races by providing campaign material to 14 different Republican candidates, some of whom are now being sued for illegal campaign practices. Those documents are very revealing, aren't they?
They really are, Sally. It's part of the overall investigation that the Political Practices Commissioner, Jonathan Modell, is doing into so-called dark money groups and whether they illegally influenced legislative races by making illegal corporate contributions. And these are most interesting because this National Right to Work group, and it also participated in races in Iowa, Kentucky, Indiana, and Nevada for state legislature. But the group came in and offered candidates a whole bunch of services, including writing personal letters, personalized letters, the standard mailers, a whole bunch of services. And Modell is contending those are illegal corporate donations. And of course, that will be taken up in a major, major case next month in a lawsuit involving Art Wittig, a veteran state legislator from Bozeman, who's denying these charges. But the National Right to Work group had been a sort of a sleepy group in Montana that had never done much. They'd try to get a right to work bill through the legislature every session. It'd get killed the same day the committee would have a hearing on it. And I was frankly pretty surprised to learn in recent months that they had undertaken so much of this kind of work, and quite sophisticated work, I might add. They would have personal letters from candidates that would go to the voters in the district, even including a letter from the candidate's spouse.
They called them wife letters, but they weren't written by their wives. They were written by staffers for the National Right to Work.
Well, I think they incorporated stuff that they got from the wife or husband saying, you know, I met my husband at the soda shop in the 50s or whatever. And very sophisticated operation. And two of the leading people involved here are LaFers, and they ran a printing press down in Livingston. So they printed, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not, I don't know how many altogether, but these very slick flyers that went out and then the custom letters. And it was an extremely comprehensive effort and kind of shows what you can do with dark money. This will be a very interesting to watch as this develops. Some candidates and legislators have already pleaded out these cases and paid fines. Case of Representative Mike Miller of Helmville, he's agreed not to run again And the one who's fighting it is Whitty, an attorney from Bozeman, a longtime legislator, and a bulldog in personality. And it promises to be a very interesting trial.
And full disclosure, Rob Saldin, our analyst here, is going to be an expert witness in that trial. And Rob, regardless of the legal outcome, I think most Montanans would agree that having out-of-state groups write your campaign letters is sleazy at best.
I think the bigger context here, of course, is this is playing out in a post-Citizens United world. And of course, Citizens United, 5-4 decision, Justice Scalia was in the majority. His death, again, kind of throws this all up in the air, not immediately, but in terms of this going before the Supreme Court potentially again in the future. But I think what campaign finance, what all the battles about campaign finance really get down to are a tension between two things that most of us would say are very important. One is free speech, and the other is avoiding corruption. And the issue comes down to where do you draw the line on this a lot of the time. Citizens United really opened up the process. Right now, what we're seeing going on in Montana is trying to figure out where Montana is going to stand in this new post-Citizens United landscape.
Well, we'll be talking about that more, and you have been listening to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program. I'm your host, Sally Mock, and I've been speaking with former Capitol reporter Chuck Johnson and University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldin. We'll have lots more to talk about next week. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Sally.
Thanks, Sally.